The show, The Golden Future, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 23.
Beloved Bhagwan, what would be the form of education in the new commune?
The education that has prevailed all over the past is very insufficient. Incomplete. Superficial. It creates only people who can earn their livelihood, but it does not give any insight into living itself. It is not only incomplete, it is harmful too. Because it is based on competition. Any kind of competition is deep down violent. And creates people who are unloving, their whole effort is to be the achiever of name, of fame, all kinds of ambitions. Obviously, they have to struggle and conflict for them. That destroys their joy and that destroys their friendliness. It seems everybody is fighting against the whole world. The education up to now has been goal oriented. What you are learning is not important. Important is the examination that will come a year after or 2 years after. It makes the future important, more important than the present. It sacrifices the present for the future. And that becomes your very style of life. You are always sacrificing the moment for something which is not present. It creates a tremendous emptiness in life. The commune of my vision will have a five-dimensional education. Before I enter into those five dimensions, few things have to be noted. One, any kind of examination should not be the part of education. But every day, every hour, observation of the teacher, their remarks all over the ears will decide whether you move further or you remain a little longer in the same class. Nobody fails, nobody passes. Just few people are speedy and few people are a little bit lazy. Because the idea of failure creates a deep wound of inferiority. And the idea of being successful also creates a different kind of disease, that of superiority. Nobody is inferior and nobody is superior. One is just oneself, incomparable. Hence, examinations will not have any place. That will change the whole perspective from the future to the present. Right this moment, what you are doing will be decisive, not 5 questions at the end of 2 years, but thousands of things. You will pass through these 2 years, each will be decisive. So the education will not be goal-oriented. the teachers had been of immense importance in the past, because he knew, he had passed all the examinations, he has accumulated knowledge. But the situation has changed, and this is one of the problems, that situations change but our responses remain the old. Now the knowledge explosion is so vast, so tremendous, so speedy, that you cannot write a big book on any scientific subject, because by the time your book will be complete, it will be out of date. New facts, new discoveries would have made it irrelevant. So now science has to depend on articles, not on books, on periodicals, not on books. The teacher was educated 30 years before. In 30 years, everything has changed. And he goes on repeating what he was taught. He is out of date. And he is making his students out of date. So in my vision, the teacher has no place. Instead of teachers, there will be guides. And the difference has to be understood. The guide will tell you where to find in the library the latest information on the subject. And teaching should not be done in the old-fashioned way, because television can do in a far better way, can bring the latest without any problem. And the teacher has to appeal to your ears. The television appeals directly to your eyes. And the impact is far greater, because eyes absorb 80% of your life situation, they are the most alive part. If you can see something, there is no need to memorize. But if you listen something, you have to memorize it. Almost 98% education can be delivered through television, and the questions that students will ask can be answered by computers. The teacher should be only a guide to show you the right channel, to show you how to use the computer, how to find the latest book. His function will be totally different. He is not imparting knowledge to you. He is making you aware of the contemporary knowledge, of the latest knowledge. He is only a guide. With these considerations, I divide education in 5 dimensions. First is informative, like history, geography. And many other subjects which can be dealt by television and computer together. The second part should be sciences, they can be imparted by television and computer too, but they are more complicated and a human guide will be more necessary. In the first dimension also come languages. Every person in the world should know at least 2 languages. One is his mother tongue, and the other is English. as an international vehicle for communication. They can also be taught by television more accurately. The accents the grammar everything can be taught more correctly than by human beings. And we can create in the world an atmosphere of brotherhood. Language connects people, and language disconnects too. There is right now no international language. These are prejudices. English is perfectly capable because it is known by more people around the world on a wider scale. Although it is not the first language, the first is Spanish. As far as population is concerned, but its population is concentrated. It is not spread all over the world. The second is Chinese. That is even more concentrated only in China. As far as numbers, they are spoken by more people. But the question is not of number. The question is of spread. English is the most spread language, and people should drop their prejudices. They should look at the reality. There have been many efforts to create languages. To avoid the prejudices, because the Spanish people can say their language should be the international language, because it is spoken by more people than any other language. English comes third. To avoid these prejudices, languages like Esperanto have been created, but no created language has been able to function. There are few things which grow, which cannot be created. A language is a growth of thousands of years. Esperanto looks so artificial. That all those efforts have failed. But two languages are absolutely necessary to create first the mother tongue, because there are feelings and nuances which you can speak only in the mother tongue. One of my professors, S.K. Saxena, a world traveler and has been a professor of philosophy in many countries, used to say that in a foreign language you can do everything, but when it comes to fight or to love, you feel that you are not being true and sincere to your feelings. So for your feelings and for your sincerity, your mother tongue, which you imbibe with the milk of the mother, which becomes part of your blood and bones and the marrow. But that is not enough. That creates a small groups of people and makes others strangers. One international language is absolutely necessary as a basis for one world, for one humanity. So two languages should be absolutely necessary for everybody. That will come in the first dimension. The second is the inquiry of scientific subjects. Which is tremendously important, because it is half of the reality, the outside reality. And the third will be what is missing in the present day education, the art of living people have taken it for granted that they know what love is. They don't know. And by the time they know, it is too late. Every child should be helped to transform his anger, hatred, jealousy in love. It should also be an important part of the third dimension the sense of humor. Our so-called education makes people sad and serious. And if your one-third life is wasted in a university in being sad and serious, it becomes ingrained. You forget the language of laughter. And the man who forgets the language of laughter has forgotten much of life. So love, laughter, and an acquaintance with life and its wonders, its mysteries. These birds singing in the trees should not go unheard. The trees and the flowers and the stars should have a connection with your heart. The sunrise and the sunset will not be just outside things. There should be something inner too. A reverence for life should be the foundation of the third dimension. People are so irreverent to life. They still go on killing animals to eat. They call it game. And if the animal eats them, then they call it calamity. It's strange. In a game, both the parties should be given the equal opportunity. And the animals are without weapons, and you are having machine guns, or arrows, you may not have thought that why arrows and machine guns were invented, so that you can kill the animal from a far away distance. To come close is dangerous. What kind of game is this? And the poor animal, defenseless against your bullet, and it is not a question of killing the animal, it is a question of being irreverent to life, because all that you need can be provided either by synthetic food or by other scientific methods. All your needs can be fulfilled. No animal has to be killed. And the person who kills animals deep down can kill human beings without any difficulty. Because what is the difference? And there are cannibals, and just few days before in Palestine, the people demanded the government to allow them to eat human flesh because the food is not enough. So why waste a dead body? Whether it has died naturally or has been destroyed by the terrorists or has been in an accident, it is good food. And the surprising thing is that the government of Palestine has agreed to the people. They had to. The food is such and people cannot be left hungry. Today they will be eating the naturally dead or accidentally dead or killed by terrorists, but this is not going forever. Soon they will start finding ways to kill people. Steal children because their flesh is thought to be the most delicious. A great reverence for life should be taught because life is God's and there is no other God than life itself. And a joy, a laughter, a sense of humor, inside a dancing spirit, the fourth dimension should be of art and creativity, paintings, music, craftsmanship, pottery, masonry, anything that is creative, all areas of creativity should be allowed the students can choose. There should be only few things compulsory. For example, an international language should be compulsory. A certain capacity to earn your livelihood should be compulsory. A certain creative art should be compulsory. You can choose through the whole rainbow of creative art. Because unless a man learns how to create, he never becomes a part of existence which is constantly creative. By being creative, one becomes divine. Creativity is the only prayer. And the fifth dimension should be the art of dying. In this fifth dimension will be all the meditations so that you can know there is no death. So that you can become aware of an eternal life inside you. This should be absolutely essential because everybody has to die. Nobody can avoid it. And in the big umbrella of meditation, you can be introduced to Zen, to Tao, to Yoga, to Hasidism, to all kinds and all possibilities that have existed, but education has not taken any care of it. In this fifth dimension, you should also be made aware of martial arts like Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, without weapons. The art of self-defense, and not only self-defense, but simultaneously a meditation too. The new commune will have a full education, a whole education, and all that is essential should be compulsory, and all that is non-essential should be optional. One can choose from the optional, which will be many. And once the basics are fulfilled, then you have to know something to enjoy: music, dance, painting. You have to know something to go inward, to know yourself. And all this can be done very easily, without any difficulty. I have been a professor myself, and I resigned from the university with the note that this is not education, this is sheer stupidity. You are not teaching anything significant. But this insignificant education prevails all over the world. It makes no difference in Soviet Union or in America. Nobody has looked for a holier, total education. In this sense, almost everybody is uneducated. Even those who have great degrees of education are uneducated in vaster areas of life. Few are more uneducated, few are less uneducated, but to find an educated man is impossible. Because education as a whole does not exist anywhere.
Beloved Book One, so now this. I'm a fairly good-looking guy with a pretty good tan, and I'm with a beautiful girlfriend, and I'm pretty intelligent. And I meditate once in a while, and I can play some chords on the guitar. And I know the difference between a prefrontal lobotomy and a free bottle in front of me. So while everyone else is trying to find out why they can't be themselves, I'd like to know why I can't be Milarepa.
Kṛtya dharma, you are perfectly good as you are. You need not be a Milarepa. These are the ideas which education and a competitive society has given to you. You want to be somebody else. You say, I am a fairly good-looking guy. Who told you that? It must have been your girlfriend. But every girlfriend says that to every boyfriend. You should not get too much impressed by such things. You say with a pretty good tan. Particularly here in India, tan is not pretty good. I hate it. Just beautiful looking people burn their skin under the sun It is a Western and stupid idea, Tom. If you want to rest, rest in the shed. Don't have any inferiority complex about your whiteness. the blacks have created the idea that black is beautiful. What about the white? Not a single white man says white is beautiful. And you say, and I am with a beautiful girlfriend. And naturally you think these things make you to be declared another Milarepa. But then everybody else then we will have to name people Milarepa number one, Milarepa number two. And you say, I meditate once in a while and I can place some chords on the guitar and I know the difference between a prefrontal lobotomy and a free bottle in front of me. So while everyone else is trying to find out why they can't be themselves, I would like to know why I can't be Milarepa. You can be, but you will be only number two. And that hurts. You can be only a carbon copy. And you don't know the difficulties of poor Milarepa. You are not aware of his problem. I have heard from reliable sources. Milarepa came home exhausted and terribly upset. I was late for work today, he told his wife. I know, he replied. I quarreled with the boss, I know. He fired me, he said glumly. I know, she answered. How the hell do you know? He told me. Screw him. Milarepa said angrily, I did. Replied the wife. Hearing this, Milarepa took his guitar and came here. it is perfectly good as you are. Milarepa has his own problems. You have a girlfriend, he has so many. And gets hit from everywhere. When one girlfriend throws him, he reaches another. Finally, he has a permanent girlfriend, Sunyo. When all the girlfriends are angry at him, then he reaches Sunyo. Sunyo is his last resort. I think you should drop this idea. You just be yourself. Milarepa is quite in a mess.
Beloved Bhagwan, Paul Gauguin, the famous French painter, dropped out of society and lived the remainder of his life on an island in the South Pacific. Shortly before his death, he finished his last masterpiece entitled, Who Are We? Where do we come from? Where are we going? About this, he writes, I have put all my energies into this work before dying. A passion so painful, a vision so clear. The other morning you spoke to us about being creative and being joyful with it, not sad. Bhagwan, is there any more you can say about the role of creativity in your vision?
Milarepa Paul Gauguin has to suffer just the way every creator suffers. Creativity is almost like pregnancy. The mother goes for 9 months in deep troubled waters, and even after the birth of the child, he is not free of responsibility. All creativity is a deep suffering. Unless your creativity does not come out of the mind but out of meditation, out of meditation creativity is sharing the joy, sharing the blissfulness that you have. Mind has no joy. It is really a wound, very painful. Pal Goga had no idea of any meditation. But he had a tremendous passion, almost a madness to create, and just to create he dropped out of society . Forgot all about his wife and children and responsibilities. He was possessed by the idea to create. The possession was so total that he cannot allow any distraction. But when you are possessed by something, you are working almost as a slave, and slavery cannot bring blissfulness. All the creators in the West have passed so long years of suffering, many of them have been forced to live in the madhouses, and many of them have committed suicide. The suffering became too much, unbearable. They had to end their own life. But still, the Western creators, either of meditation or of music, painting, are of dance, has not become aware why he has to suffer. In the East, the situation is totally different. Not a single creator has suffered. In fact, only the creators have enjoyed the life to its fullest. Not a single creator has been turned into a madhouse. Not a single creator has committed suicide. But creators have moved deeper into meditation, and many of them have become mystics. From painting, from music, from dance, they have moved deeper into their own being. The Western society lives under an affliction. The ignorance about meditation. Hence, whatever they do is out of the mind. And mind is not the source of joy. It can only create again, but never exists. Mind is your hell. So learn to be more meditative and let your creativity be secondary to your meditativeness. Then you will have a totally different state of being, that of ecstasy. And out of ecstasy, whatever is created has also some flavor of it. Perhaps in the West only Gurdjieff is the man who has divided art in two sections, the objective art and the subjective art. The subjective art is from the mind. And is out of anguish. The objective art, the Taj Mahal, the caves of Ellora and Ajanta, the temples of Khajuraho, they have come from meditative people. Out of their love, out of their silence, they wanted to share. It is their contribution to the world. The Western artists has lived under a very heavy burden. It is time that they should be made aware that there is something more beyond your mind. First reach to that beyond, and then you can create a star. And they will not only be a great joy to you, they will also be a great joy for those who will see them. Just in a full moon night, sit by the side of Taj Mahal. Don't do anything, just look at it. And you will find suddenly a silence descending on you, a peace filling your heart. The mind is stopping its constant checking. An objective piece of art like Taj Mahal is not just to be seen, but to be lived. And then you will be in a certain way connected with the creator of that beautiful architecture. It was created by Sufi masters. It's very safe, somehow creates within you a new blissful state. But the Western tourist comes with the camera, takes few shots from here and there, and runs away to some other place. He does not know how to appreciate an objective art. One has to meditate on it. Then it may be that thousands of years have passed between the creator of that piece and you. Suddenly that distance disappears. You become part of that creative joy, of that creative dance. Milarepa, creativity is secondary, meditation is basic and fundamental. Everything should come out of your meditation. Then it will give you a beatitude. Your being a new song, and it will help others to experience something of it. It will depend on their meditativeness. I would like to state one very strange statement, that a greater meditator will find more joy more peace, more blissfulness than even the Creator Himself. If a Gautam Buddha sits by the side of Taj Mahal, then what those Sufi masters had experienced by creating it will be left far behind. Gautam Buddha will experience something far more deeper, far more truthful, far more beautiful. Whether you create or you observe an objective piece of creativity, meditation should be the key. Without it, mind can only spread on the canvas its nightmares. Most of the paintings of the great painters like Paul Gauguin or Picasso are almost like vomit. They could not contain it. Their agony and suffering was so much, they threw it on the canvas to get relief. The real objective art is not a relief. It is not a sickness that you want to get rid of. It is a blissfulness that you want to share, and by sharing it grows. You have more of it the more it is shared. Okay, Manisha.
Yes, so go on. Thank you.